Welcome back to another episode of Sleep Whispers. I'm Harris, and this is a podcast of whispered ramblings and whispered readings to help you to relax and fall asleep. This is episode number 88, and it's a Whisperpedia episode about living on red dwarf planets. If you are enjoying this podcast and you'd like to access all of the older episodes, the extra episodes, the behind the scenes videos and photos from my life, then you can click the link to my Patreon page in the show notes of this episode, or go straight to patreon.com/sleepwhispers. Alright, why did I choose the topic of life on red dwarf planets for this Whisperpedia episode? Thank you to Mike for suggesting a topic about space or universe or Earth-like planets. So that was his general suggestion he provided for a future topic, was something about space or universe or Earth-like planets. And I know there are several other of you who also really like readings about space and universe and the physics of the universe. So I think this will please several of you. And as usual, I try to select topics that I don't know much about, and I don't know what a red dwarf is. The only basic thing I know is that it is a funny British sci-fi TV show, but that's not what this reading is about. I think I've heard reference to it, or I know it's something out in space. And if you'd asked me what I would guess a red dwarf is, I would have guessed a planet, and I would have been wrong. So even my title is a little misleading. Red dwarf planets. But what that means is that red dwarfs are stars, and they make up what's referred to as a red dwarf system. And so a red dwarf system has planets that circle that red dwarf star. And that's basically the focus of this reading. I also liked the way this topic complements the last Whisperpedia topic about life in the deep sea. So this is like life in deep space. So I thought that was interesting. And I think the final reason I like this as a topic to fall asleep to. is that sometimes for me, the kind of thing I like to listen to and fall asleep to is something that engages and captures my imagination, that kind of diverts my thoughts onto something I sort of have to visualize and something I have to think about in a creative way, like imagining what it would be like to live at the bottom of the sea, or imagining what it would be like to live on another planet. And so a topic like this works for me, at least, to fall asleep to. All right, here are some questions which will be addressed as I read to you about living on red dwarf planets, or living on planets that orbit around red dwarf stars. That's too long of a title, but it's all more descriptive and accurate. All right, anyway, here are some questions I'll be addressing. What is a red dwarf star? How common are red dwarf stars compared to other stars? What determines if the planets in a red dwarf system are habitable, meaning that they can support life? What is a red dwarf flare, and how does it affect life on a planet? What is tidal locking, and how does that affect life on a planet? Why would animals on windy planets have to have infrared vision? I found that one very fascinating. What is the major advantage that red dwarf stars have over other stars as sustainers of life? And I'll finish with the percent of planets in red dwarf systems which are Earth-sized. Okay, let's get to it. The following are select sections from the Wikipedia article titled Habitability of Red Dwarf Systems. I'll begin with an overview of red dwarf stars and red dwarf systems. Red dwarf stars are the smallest, coolest, and most common type of star. Estimates of their abundance range from 70% of stars in spiral galaxies to more than 90% of all stars in elliptical galaxies. An often quoted median figure being 73% of the stars in the Milky Way, known since the 1990s from radio telescopic observation to be a barred spiral. Given their low energy output, red dwarfs are never visible by the unaided eye from Earth. Neither the closest red dwarf to the Sun, when viewed individually, Proxima Centauri, which is also the closest star to the Sun, nor the closest solitary red dwarf. Barnard's star is anywhere near visual magnitude. The habitability of red dwarf systems is determined by a large number of factors from a variety of sources. Although the low stellar flux, high probability of tidal locking, small circumstellar habitable zones, and high stellar variation experienced by planets of red dwarf stars are impediments to their planetary habitability. The ubiquity and longevity of red dwarfs are positive factors. Determining how the interactions between these factors affect habitability may help to reveal the frequency of extraterrestrial life and intelligence. Intense tidal heating caused by the proximity of planets to their host red dwarfs is a major impediment to life developing in these systems. Other tidal effects, such as the extreme temperature differences created by one side of habitable zone planets permanently facing the star and the other perpetually turned away, and lack of planetary axial tilts, reduce the probability of life around red dwarfs. Non-tidal factors, such as extreme stellar variation, spectral energy distributions shifted to the infrared relative to the Sun, and small circumstellar habitable zones due to low light output, further reduce the prospects for life in red dwarf systems. There are, however, several effects that increase the likelihood of life on red dwarf planets. Intense cloud formation on the star-facing side of a tidally locked planet may reduce overall thermal flux and drastically reduce equilibrium temperature differences between the two sides of the planet. In addition, the sheer number of red dwarfs, which account for about 85% of at least 100 billion stars in the Milky Way, statistically increases the probability that there might exist habitable planets orbiting some of them. As of 2013, there are expected to be tens of billions of super-Earth planets in the habitable zones of red dwarf stars in the Milky Way. The next sections are about luminosity and spectral composition. For years, astronomers ruled out red dwarfs as potential abodes for life. The low masses of the stars cause the nuclear fusion reactions at their cores to proceed exceedingly slow, giving them luminosities ranging from a maximum of roughly 3% that of the Sun to a minimum of just 0.01%. Consequently, any planet orbiting a red dwarf would have to have a low semi-major axis in order to maintain Earth-like surface temperature. Such a world would have a year lasting just 6 days. Much of the low luminosity of a red dwarf falls in the infrared part of the electromagnetic spectrum, with lower energy than the visible light in which the sun peaks. As a result, photosynthesis on a red dwarf planet would require additional photons to achieve excitation potentials comparable to those needed in Earth photosynthesis for electron transfers. This is due to the lower average energy level of near-infrared photons comparable to visible. Having to adapt to a far wider spectrum to gain the maximum amount of energy, foliage on a habitable red dwarf planet would probably appear black if viewed in visible light. In addition, because water strongly absorbs red and infrared light, less energy would be available for aquatic life on red dwarf planets. However, a similar effect of preferential absorption by water ice would increase its temperature relative to an equivalent amount of radiation from a sun-like star, thereby extending the habitable zone of red dwarfs outward. Another fact that would inhibit habitability is the evolution of the red dwarf stars, as such stars have an extended pre-main sequence phase. Their eventual habitable zones would be for around 1 billion years a zone where water wasn't liquid, but in its gaseous state. Thus, terrestrial planets in the actual habitable zones, if provided with abundant surface water in their formation, would have been subject to a runaway greenhouse effect for several hundred million years. During such an early runaway phase, photolysis of water vapor would allow hydrogen escape to space and the loss of several Earth oceans of water, leaving a thick, abiotic oxygen atmosphere. The next sections are about tidal effects. At the close orbital distances, planets around red dwarf stars would have to remain for liquid water to exist at their surfaces. Tidal locking to the host star is likely, causing the planet to rotate around its axis once for every revolution around the star. As a result, one side of the planet would eternally face the star, and the other side would perpetually face away, creating great extremes of temperature. For many years, it was believed that life on such planets would be limited to a ring-like region known as the Terminator, where the star would always appear on the horizon. It was also believed that efficient heat transfer between the sides of the planet necessitates atmospheric circulation of an atmosphere so thick as to disallow photosynthesis. Due to differential heating, it was argued, a tidally locked planet would experience fierce winds with permanent torrential rain at the point directly facing the local star, the subsolar point. In the opinion of one author, this makes complex life improbable. Plant life would have to adapt to the constant gale. For example, by anchoring securely into the soil and sprouting long, flexible leaves that do not snap. Animals would rely on infrared vision because signaling by calls or signaling by scents would be difficult over the din of the planet-wide gale. Underwater life would, however, be protected from fierce winds and flares and vast blooms of black photosynthetic plankton and algae could support the sea life. In contrast to the previously bleak picture for life, 1997 studies by Robert Haberle and Menajad Joshi of NASA's Ames Research Center in California have shown that a planet's atmosphere, assuming it included greenhouse gases, carbon dioxide, and water, need only to be 100 millibar or 10% of Earth's atmosphere for the star's heat to be effectively carried to the night side, a figure well within the bounds of photosynthesis. Research 2 years later by Martin Heath of Greenwich Community College has shown that seawater too could effectively circulate without freezing solid if the ocean basins were deep enough to allow free flow beneath the night side's ice cap. Additionally, a 2010 study concluded that Earth-like water worlds tidally locked to their stars would still have temperatures above 240 Kelvin or minus 33 degrees Celsius on the night side. Climate models constructed in 2013 indicate that cloud formation on tidally locked planets would minimize the temperature difference between the day and the night side, greatly improving habitability prospects for red dwarf planets. Further research, including a consideration of the amount of photosynthetically active radiation, has suggested that tidally locked planets in red dwarf systems might at least be habitable for higher plants. The existence of a permanent day side and night side is not the only potential setback for life around red dwarfs. Tidal heating experienced by planets in the habitable zone of red dwarfs, less than 30% of the mass of the sun, may cause them to be baked out and become tidal Venuses. Combined with the other impediments to red dwarf habitability, this may make the probability of many red dwarfs hosting life as we know it very low compared to other star types. There may not even be enough water for habitable planets around many red dwarfs. What little water which is found on these planets, in particular Earth-sized ones, may be located on the cold night side of the planet. In contrast to the predictions of earlier studies on tidal Venuses, though, this trapped water may help to stave off runaway greenhouse effects and improve the habitability of red dwarf systems. Moons of gas giants within a habitable zone could overcome this problem, since they would be tightly locked to their primary and not their star, and thus would experience a day-night cycle. The same principle would apply to double planets, which would likely be tightly locked to each other. Note, however, that how quickly tidal locking occurs can depend on a planet's oceans and even atmosphere, and may mean that tidal locking fails to happen even after many giga-years. Additionally, tidal locking is not the only possible end state of tidal dampening. Mercury, for example, has had sufficient time to tidally lock, but is in a 3-2 spin orbit resonance. The next sections are about the variability of red dwarf systems. Red dwarfs are far more variable and violent than their more stable larger cousins. Often they are covered in star spots that can dim their emitted light by up to 40% for months at a time. On Earth, life has adapted in many ways to the similarly reduced temperatures of the winter. Life may survive by hibernating and/or by diving into deep water where temperatures could be more constant. Oceans would potentially freeze over during extreme cold periods. After the cold has ended, the planet's albedo would be higher, causing light from the red dwarf to be reflected, reducing planetary temperatures. At other times, red dwarfs emit gigantic flares that can double their brightness in a matter of minutes. Indeed, as more and more red dwarfs have been scrutinized for variability, more of them have been classified as flare stars to some degree or other. Such variation in brightness could be very damaging for life. Flares might also produce torrents of charged particles that could strip off sizable portions of the planet's atmosphere. Scientists who subscribe to the rare Earth hypothesis doubt that red dwarfs could support life amid strong flaring. Tidal locking would probably result in a relatively low planetary magnetic moment. Active red dwarfs that emit coronal mass ejections would bow back the magnetosphere until it contacted the planetary atmosphere. As a result, the atmosphere would undergo strong erosion, possibly leaving the planet uninhabitable. Otherwise, it is suggested that if the planet had a magnetic field, it would deflect the particles from the atmosphere, even the slow rotation of a tidally locked M-dwarf planet. It spins once for every time it orbits its star, would be enough to generate a magnetic field as long as part of the planet's interior remained molten. But actual mathematical models conclude that, even under the highest attainable dynamo-generated magnetic field strengths, exoplanets with masses like that of Earth lose a significant fraction of their atmospheres by the erosion of the exobase's atmosphere by CME bursts and XUV emissions. Even those Earth-like planets closer than 0.8 AU affecting also GK stars probably lose their atmospheres. However, the violent flaring period of a red dwarf's life cycle is estimated to only last roughly the first 1.2 billion years of its existence. If a planet forms far away from a red dwarf so as to avoid tidal lock and then migrates into the star's habitable zone after this turbulent initial period, it is possible for life to have a chance to develop. Another way that life could initially protect itself from radiation would be remaining underwater until the star has passed through its early flare stage, assuming the planet could retain enough of an atmosphere to sustain liquid oceans. The scientists who wrote Aurelia believed that life could survive on land despite a red dwarf flaring. Once life reached onto land, the low amount of UV produced by a quiescent red dwarf means that life could thrive without an ozone layer, and thus never need to produce oxygen. The last sections are about the abundance and longevity of red dwarf stars. The major advantage that red dwarfs have over other stars as abodes for life is that they produce light energy for a very long time. It took 4.5 billion years before humans appeared on Earth, and life as we know it will see suitable conditions for as little as half a billion years more. In contrast, red dwarfs could exist for trillions of years because their nuclear reactions are far slower than those of larger stars, meaning that life both would have longer to evolve and longer to survive. Furthermore, although the odds of finding a planet in the habitable zone around any specific red dwarf are unknown, the total amount of a habitable zone around all red dwarfs combined is equal to the total amount around sun-like stars, given their ubiquity. The first super-Earth with a mass of 3 to 4 times that of Earth's found in the potentially habitable zone of its star is Gliese 581G, and its star, Gliese 581, is indeed a red dwarf. Although tidally locked, it is thought possible that at its terminator, liquid water may well exist. The planet is thought to have existed for approximately 7 billion years and has a large enough mass to support an atmosphere. Another possibility could come in the far future, when, according to computer simulations, our red dwarf becomes a blue dwarf as it is exhausting its hydrogen supply. As this kind of star is more luminous than the previous red dwarf, planets orbiting it that were frozen during the former stage could be thawed during the several billions of years this evolutionary stage lasts, giving life an opportunity to appear and evolve. A study of archival Spitzer data gives the first idea, an estimate of how frequent Earth-sized worlds are around ultra-cool dwarf stars, and that frequency is 30 to 45%. I hope you are deeply relaxed, or even better, deeply asleep. Good night. Sleep well.